Hello and welcome to Radio Free Nintendo. It is May 12, 2022. I am James Jones. I'm joined today by Mr. Guillaume Vaillant.
Good evening.
Good evening. And Mr. Greg Lay.
Ahoy, ahoy, everyone.
It's episode 771. We are not joined by Mr. John Lindemann, and that's on, well, it's on me that it's just the three of us today. I knew John wasn't going to be around and forgot to book a guest. Unlike last time when I knew Greg wasn't going to be around and failed to book a guest. The first one is me being a bad host. The second one is just bad luck. So today I am the bad host. I apologize. But we're going to do a little bit more of a concise episode this week. New business. We don't have a ton to talk about. There was the Indie World Showcase that happened this week, but we haven't all seen it. I did play the Card Sharks demo. Go play it. But we're going to focus on some listener mail because I have been absolutely excoriating you for not sending email. And that's true. I'm going to keep doing that. I'm going to keep shaming you for not sending email because apparently shame works, which is why the Reds are four of six since I last talked about how dreadful they are on this show.
The win totals exploded.
Almost after tonight, they'll have doubled it since we talked, which wasn't a huge accomplishment, but still, I'm excited. 108 and 43, here we come. So emails go to rfn at nintendoworldreport.com. That's rfn at nintendoworldreport.com. We have selected a trio of emails this week, and we deliberately sort of nibbled around the edges to make sure that emails that were conducive to the presence of Mr. Lindemann would not be leveraged here. So I will read the first email because I believe it is the longest, and therefore I'm going to give it to myself because I'm a good guy who needs to make up for being a bad host. Daniel writes, "Good day, party boys and John, B-O-I-S. I want to give a pause here, which means I'm already not reading the email.
Daniel may have inadvertently named the episode with that because it implies that this episode is oops, all party boys.
It's true. It's good. That's a good name. Got to write that one down.
I'm sorry.
No, please. There's been a trend lately of people like writing good salutations or creative salutations. I appreciate it. I want you to know that your extra effort, as minor as it might be, touches me in a not terrible way, which is what y'all normally do. So thank you. Daniel writes, "Good day, party boys and John. So I don't want to start too heavy, but the last few months for me have not been the best. A heap of real-life situations have resulted in some of the worst depression I've had in my life. Usually gaming would be my go-to escape to relax and unwind, but honestly, I'm just finding it hard to focus on anything. Part of this is that the depression, and the other part is ADHD, making it nearly impossible to focus on anything. When all the stuff kicked off, I was able to get into Stardew Valley and found that great for 100-plus hours, but ultimately it just got repetitive. The only games I've been able to play are my usual go-tos of Ring Fit Adventure, Pokemon Unite, and Pokemon Go. So before I get to my question, I'm getting professional help for all the issues mentioned. Anyway, I want to know, what are all your go-to games when you're not doing great, when you just need to escape and feel good again? Also, any suggestions for a JRPG fan finding it hard to focus on anything? Kind of looking for something open-ended, turn-based combat, light, not too heavy. And if it has a deep skill system to focus on, that would be great. As always, thanks for the great show. Thanks for the smiles you lot bring, as it always helps, no matter how bad someone's day is. If you can make them smile, you've improved it just a bit. Oh, also, what are the chances of a Ring Fit game club from you guys? Oh, boy. To answer that last part, I remember on this show I announced during like the very beginning of the pandemic, which is probably going to be a topic that comes up in this email a lot, when Ring Fit Adventure was being hoarded alongside toilet paper and I don't know, what were the other things? Cleaning bleach, masks, that I had Ring Fit Adventure and had had it for almost a year at that point and had not touched it. I regret to inform you that that situation has not changed in the intervening 2 years. It's still sitting in my gym, just chilling. Previous
but,
excuse
but
I
then
had.
You have was, a, yeah, you have a gym.
Right. I have a gym. Previous excuse has been that, well, I mean, the docking station is downstairs. I can't hook it up to the TV. Now I've got two docking stations because I own two switches. And the worst part is it's in there. The docking station is hooked up to the damn TV. I just haven't. I've never used the docking station hooked up to the TV. It's wild. So, probably not high, but you know, if we get feedback from listeners that they're actually interested in doing it, we'll at least talk about it. But I guess first, like, I've been to a place that seems a lot like what Daniel is describing. I can't compare experiences, and you wouldn't do that anyway, but it sucks. And it's just absolute, it's just an awful feeling. So, like, first off, awesome that you're getting help. Super proud of you for that. Like, that was going to be my advice when I was reading the email, and then I saw you'd already done it. So, that's fantastic. And, you know, things do get better. You know, as crappy as it can feel, like, there will be times where this, and it's not going to be, you know, immediate. It's going to be good days and bad days. I'm sure you've already had them. And yeah, I mean, definitely there have been times where I just don't feel it. I look at my games I want to play and I just kind of, you know, like wave my, like, if you imagine a cat that's too lazy to play, but knows that the person who feeds it wants to play and it's just kind of lying there and like half-heartedly slapping at the toy. That's kind of where, that's like my emotional spirit animal in those times where it's like, oh, I have a podcast to do. I should play some, whatever. And it's not always like depression. Sometimes it's stress. Sometimes if my stress is super high, I just don't want to do that stuff. And I don't know why. It just doesn't connect with me at that moment. So, like, I've been going through a lot of stuff at work recently, and not bad stuff, just high stress. And so, like, it's a lot of Forza Horizons 5, whatever the current one is, which is my eternal quest to quit playing Forza Horizon 5. I've been trying. I keep trying. But every week I sign on Sunday and start the weekly challenges, and by Wednesday, the last day I have to do them, I finish them every week for 6 months. I've been trying to quit for the last 3 months, but it is. It's this kind of like cathartic outlet of, I have these things I have to check off. You know, I have a task list to go accomplish. I don't really have to think about it too much. I do have to think about how I configure the car, and then if it's like a hard race, I might have to think about the conditions and that kind of stuff. But like the actual act of doing is relatively meditative. You know, once I'm behind the wheel, it's just go and do, succeed. And that has real value when I'm feeling shitty, because it's not mindless. I'm having to really focus intently on not crashing. There was a race this week where the car, or there was a race series of three races, where the car I was driving was, I want to say it was an Impreza that I had tuned all the way up to go 206 miles an hour at the sacrifice of everything else, including its ability to not spin out and flip over and kill me. So, like, I was hyper locked in. And that sort of all that stress I've got going on around me right now kind of quieted out for a while. And so that's the kind of stuff that I look for when I'm in a place like that. I look for something that isn't necessarily going to be asking a lot of me emotionally. You know, if it's a game with a story that I find compelling, I'm less likely to want to experience that at that moment. It just, you know, it's similar with like movies and TV. Like, I don't want something that's going to give me emotions because I've got enough of those at that moment. I want something that's about just like the procedure, about going and doing. I haven't talked about it on the show, but if you go way back to the early times that like when it was the early days of me on the show. So Greg, John, Johnny, and myself, like the early times of that, I talked about strategy games a lot, like frequently. And I haven't probably in a decade because I realized that nobody else cared. So I just stopped talking about them. They're in that catharsis space where there is a, you know, I put together a plan. I work the plan out. I put the plan together. I execute the plan. And once the plan is in execution, it's really just a matter of going and doing. And I can busily make myself, you know, set up a campaign for an entire evening and go from, you know, 7 p.m. to 2 in the morning on a work night, just putting together the wheels of a campaign that I'm going to launch the next day. And sometimes I don't even do it. Sometimes, like, the emotional place I'm in, like, the actual task of carrying out the campaign is too much, and I don't want to mess with it. But, like, the whole machinations of putting everything together has a place where it's kind of, like, occupying my brain in exactly the right way I need it to, so that the other stuff around doesn't intrude. You know, it's not like, hey, I'm going to go play something that gives me happiness stuff, because I find that that doesn't really work. It's like my brain knows I'm just trying to feed it junk food. I need something to keep my head busy and to just chew up time. And so that's sort of the thing I look for. And I know that's going to be hyper personal. You know, that goes really to personality types too. Like, this is how my brain works. My brain needs things to puzzle over. And that's a really good thing for them to do. Kerbal's another one where, like, I'll spend hours engineering a ship and not launching it because I am just engineering it on the ground, figuring out going into the simulator and looking at numbers and just cranking out on them. Because that's, you know, that's the kind of thing that occupies my brain in exactly the way I need it to when I'm not feeling good, when I'm not thinking good, when the thoughts aren't where they should be. That's tough. Like, if you've never had that experience, I mean, it's hard to describe it to somebody. Like, when your brain just doesn't want to give you good feelings, it's put an economy on them and said, like, I'm going to dole them out at very limited intervals. It's tough. And I think a lot of people probably had, you know, their first major experience with it in the last couple of years. I think the pandemic really introduced that feeling to people as sort of it's not necessarily helplessness, like a listlessness that comes with it is probably the way I would describe it.
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly not the best choice to answer this question, because if I have a gift for anything, it's probably for making myself more miserable. I don't like the idea of making other people more miserable as well. But certainly, I think quite a lot of the things you spoke about, James, is things I can relate to in terms of, I think, probably come up a few times over the years, the notion sometimes that if you're not feeling particularly, especially like, capable of emotional engagement with things, you almost not want to do certain things, you know, for fear of like ruining them or spoiling them. You know, essentially it was just like, you know, if it's like you said, kind of a particular, like a narrative experience in a game, or it could be obviously other media, but especially in the game context here, you know, that's meant to be quite a lot of the value in the game based on, you know, like reviews or opinions that you heard before you bought it. There's definitely a reticence there of just like, well, you know, it's just going to kind of bounce off or not, you know, really be properly absorbed anyway at a time like this. So you sort of shy away from that, you know. But then on the other hand, it's tough because it's sort of what you're just like, well, you know, go, well, when are you going to do some of these things? And certainly the pandemic, you know, kind of heightened that sort of thing, where it's just like, on the one hand, you don't, you kind of like, oh, let's not do that now, you know. There's got to be a better time to do it.
I've got infinite time.
And then as it drags on, you're just like, I don't know, is there going to be a better time to do it? you really start to, and then at some point you do, you, maybe you're going to say, well, you know, either I'm going to like swear off this kind of storytelling forever. You know, maybe you've got to, sort of almost force yourself to do some of these things now and again rather than totally box yourself in. But yeah, I think a lot of the time you kind of, there's an element of stuff that's almost like you described a bit there, like chewing gum for your brain, where right. it's doing something, but it's not doing something terribly taxing or that requires like a level of engagement that you might not really be able to summon. You know, for me, like on one end, I think that could be something like Picross. It can work like that in terms of it is a kind of quote unquote puzzle solving, some sort of mental activity, but it's not creative. I think definitely creative, anything that's about creative thinking or other aspects of creativity, in gameplay, first of all, yeah, is not my strong suit in general, but it's especially not so if you're at a kind of low ebb. Because there's right. There's that extra level of just like anything I come up with will not work or is rubbish. You know, it's just more strong. So something like Picross, which is completely without creativity at all, it's just, you know, a routine that you run, can work in that scenario where other things seem more off-putting for that kind of thing. Also, there's definitely a kind of element of retreat to the familiar, in part because, again, you can't spoil it. You already consumed this in the past. You already know it. So it's kind of like you can't really kind of, except with these things that are, you know, something that's like really well thought of, you know, kind of game that you haven't played before. And if you play it for the first time now, it'll always be, you know, associated with that. And you might not, you know, kind of engage with it the way that it might deserve in a way. But, you know, if you're talking about familiar stuff, then, you know, you've got more of a kind of path to just like, well, you know, unless, I mean, I guess it's maybe possible you could somehow overwrite your memories of it from the past with ones now, but it's generally not kind of something that I've experienced anyway. But certainly with the, I think I've ended up playing the N64 games on the expansion pack more than I imagined I would, in part for that sort of reason, because it's just kind of there. And it's, you know, quite a number of these games, on there are games that, you know, I played a great deal of in the 90s because, as we've mentioned many times before, you know, importing N64 games was expensive business. And so when you had one of these things, it was your game for your months on end. And if you liked it at all, you know, you kind of get everything out of it. And so, and then that kind of led into like when Wii Virtual Console came along, I wasn't as quick to sort of, compared with the multitudes of games which I'd never played before, the sort of having a chance to look at for the first time, especially on the other systems on Wii Virtual Console. I didn't really jump all over those N64 games then. But, you know, now it's a bit of sort of app time to play them, and especially sort of Mario Golf is very relaxing, and you kind of, it's an element of like almost like a Picross kind of thing in terms of just doing the kind of calculations of like, okay, you know, it's this far to the pin in yardage, but we've got the wind to think about, we've got the rain to think about, you know, so go a club up here or use a power shot there, you know, do this with the trajectory of the ball and all, you know, it's not really creative. It's just like you kind of, it just engages your mind to do a few routine kind of calculations and play this kind of slow paced, you've got to do whatever pace you want to play it at, really, kind of game, with some, you know, chilled out Sakuraba music and all that kind of thing, which actually, thinking about it, you could extend to the, in a, you know, not the most obvious way, but the JRPG part of the question. You know, if you could look at maybe the GBC version on the 3DS Virtual Console or the GBA version on the Wii U Virtual Console. You've got the sort of
RPG. That GBA version is so good.
The RPG kind of component of the game. I know Super Rush kind of has that as well, but I don't know how sort of successfully it really recreates that. But certainly, yeah, having played those games, GBC, GBA, you know, like, it, obviously it's a little bit different in terms of the golf part because you don't have the fully realized three-dimensional courses and everything, but it's still fundamentally you're very similar and very solid as a golf game. And then you have those kinds of, you know, kind of RPG elements as well, building out the character and stuff. So that's not a bad choice there. But I think playing those N64 games to the amount that I have over the past several months is funny. Again, these are games I know very, very well. And there's not a lot of surprises it could kind of show you in terms of, you know, like, oh, I forgot about this, or I, you know, because you knew them really well. And even, you know, is kind of like the flaws about them you remember well. That's the thing, you know, when you play them to death, as much as you might like them, like, the flaws also become very apparent. But I guess the biggest thing I've taken away from playing them is just it reminds me how much affection I had for those games. Like, you know, like, mm-hmm. I said, the content doesn't surprise me because it's, you know, like I said, I just knew it really well. But it's just the sensation of just, like, oh, you know, I really, really loved this back then. You know what I mean? And it's kind of, it reminds you that you don't really engage with games on that emotional level these days for various reasons, I suppose. And some of it is just because I think there's just so many like cool games out there today to play, and you just kind of expect them to be there. Whereas as a younger person, it's more like special, that it's just like you feel fortunate to be able to play these things and have fun with them, you know, even if they are flawed or, you know, various other ways. So that could be a double-edged sword in terms of it's simultaneously sort of comforting, but at a certain point, it also makes you sad that you don't engage with things like that anymore. But, you know, that is the problem, you know, when you, there's always going to be a certain element of that, but, the familiar things can help, but at a certain point, you've also got to kind of go back a little bit. You've probably got to push back on it a little bit because otherwise it's a kind of, a cyclical retreat that isn't probably going anywhere that good.
Yeah, I so personally, I've never, well, no, wait, that's not true. There are statements I can't make, but, how can I even say this? My level, my emotional baseline, like, I don't deviate from that a whole lot. And there are times when I wonder, like, am I burnt out? Because I, you know, sometimes I feel like maybe I'm just like I've had this long burnout and I just haven't noticed because I'm so. I don't even know how to say this, but it's like I don't have a whole lot of energy to improve my lot in general, mm-hmm. And it's easy to go back into games and just spend your free time there. So. On the one hand, is playing video games the way to feel better? Probably not when you feel like sometimes I feel like that. But other times they are a great retreat, and I do enjoy, they do seem to help my mood. And I found that, yeah, like I found that I cannot go back to games too often. Otherwise they lose that power that they have to kind of bring me back, you know, feelings of, like you described, Greg.
He's a concern. I feel certainly that, you know, you go to the well too many times and it just, yeah, it becomes more associated with, you know, mundane or otherwise perhaps unpleasant realities of today than its previous associations held.
Yeah. But the Mario games, the 2D Mario games are a little bit like that for me. Like I would have thought that I could always go back to Mario 3 or Super Mario World. And I found lately that that's not really true. So, that sucks. But I found that what still works is when it is a game that I have played, but not in a long time. And so I'm rediscovering this game and seeing it in a new light. Like, I've forgotten most of it. I haven't gone back to it. So, like, a lot of it is just, like, kind of refreshing my memory. Like, oh, yeah, like, that's how this game is. That's what happens in it. This is how it's played. And, like, I remember, well, just last week I was talking about Final Fantasy XIII, right? A game that I am still playing today and I'm still enjoying, and it's still reminding me of just, you know, a little bit over 10 years ago, which doesn't sound like it should be that long ago, but it kind of feels like it's been a lifetime. I played it when it came out, but not since then, and now that I'm replaying it, I'm like, it kind of brings back a lot of memories, and I had a good time originally, like, that's vital for this to work, like, you have to have enjoyed, I think, the game originally, but yeah, like, it's kind of reminding me of what I liked about it, and it's just interesting to, it's like a very chill game. It is linear, like, yeah. So a lot has been said about that linearity, but you could also argue that it's streamlined. I'm finding as I'm playing it that, like, well, this was divisive back then, but I feel like today it would make, like, a great phone game, a great tablet game, which might, again, like, might seem like I'm damning it with faint praise, but it is so streamlined that it is very effortless, and it's easy to kind of, yeah, sit down with it for a long period, make numbers go up, just engage with, like, a pretty fun combat system, don't have to worry too much about going the wrong way or anything. You just, you know, follow these characters. They've got, you know, problems that are not easy to solve, but, like, they're kind of, I don't want to say cute. That's not, but, like, you know, like, it's not too deep, but it's just enough to give you, you know, a little bit of something to make them appealing and to make them, that you want to follow their adventures. Anyway, I'm rambling here, but, like, I guess, yeah, I've lost my point. But I'm sorry.
It happens, especially with the more serious emails.
Yeah. I guess, like, the ingredients also, like, for a game to kind of suck me in and make me forget about my troubles. I found that the two genres that end up being my comfort food are RPGs, a certain type of RPGs, and open world games. So he's asking in his email, like, RPGs with, like, deep systems. I would say, like, any of the three Xenoblade games might be a good candidate, and they've got, like, that open world.
I was going to say, Xenoblade X in particular, which is, of course, the hardest one to play, has the most insane and arcane combat system if you want to dig into it. You don't have to, but you can.
Yeah. But yeah, so I think that's a great candidate, and it's got that open world that I look for, and it's got that, you know, it's extremely long, so it will keep you busy for a long time.
It's just fun to get lost in, too.
Yeah. Now, I hesitate to recommend this one, but Romancing Saga 3, if you look, like, 2 years ago or so, or was it just last year? I don't know. But I talked about it.
Yes.
I fell into that hole. Like, it has depth, but it is very obtuse, and it's the kind of game that you might want to look into FAQs and things like that to figure out. And a lot of its outcomes are, you know, a little bit of a random roll of the dice. So, you know, I hesitate to recommend it, but I had so much fun with it, much more than I thought I would. So that might be a good one, Romancing Saga 3. And it's pretty long, and it's... yeah, like, go back to that podcast where I listened to it. Otherwise, like, in terms of open worlds, I find that just any open world that lets me just get lost and try to find all the doodads, they're very good at making me, again, forget about whatever is troubling me. And I would recommend in particular Lego City Undercover, which is just like combines that open world with, you know, lots of fun stuff to find, lots of Easter eggs, and also it's just cute as heck, and I don't know, like lots of little jokes that made me smile, and I think that's probably what you're looking for right now. I can't.
Yeah, I guess you have to get past the bit of the tonal disconnect of the beginning of the game, starting with Walking on Sunshine. That might be a little bit too jolly to begin with.
Yeah, perhaps.
You know, it's amazing. It is. Just if don't think of it as trying to be cheerful. Think of it as a silly pun on people stepping on Lego, which I assume is the spirit with which it was originally intended. But yeah, it's tough as that kind of thing in terms of. James mentioned this already.
I can't guarantee that, like, you know, he's gonna like that. It's gonna be a hit with everyone, but like recently. Just recently in the Discord, Mr. Glubglub was asking, like, well, is this worth $6 US on the eShop? And then downloaded it and like, oh yeah, this is funny. This is pretty funny.
It's really super cheap on the US eShop, isn't it? I don't think it's been that cheap anywhere else, but for whatever, quite regularly as well, I see it, you know, kind of on the discount list on the US account. But James mentioned it earlier on in terms of like that, you know, if you have something that's just totally too far away from where you are, it kind of, it's just going to bounce off. It's not, you're not right. going to engage with it. But equally, you know, it's not great to just like, yeah, let's just load
let's
up
just
on the most
the saddest shit
melancholy, you know, stuff in the world. So that kind of, but I think RPGs, you know, JRPGs do often strike quite a good balance in that way in terms of stuff that's kind of, you know, that's got elements of like, maybe melancholy in it, but also like of grandeur and exploration, and you know, certainly the Xenoblade games, you know, and their various kind of arrangements of themes, especially like the night themes of like places and stuff, are often like really quite sort of soothing and relaxing and stuff. I mean, they tend to be, I think, you know, some of the most apt for this sort of space, because it's not like outright depressing. Is not the video game equivalent of the kind of trope of, you know, man listens to Radiohead in the dark or whatever, but equally, you know, it's not going to be like listening to bloody happy joy or whatever. You know, it just strikes a good balance.
But yeah, I don't know. Personally, when I'm just feeling down, maybe not depressed, but just like, well, I need to smile a little bit. Like, of course, like most Nintendo developed games, especially the more recent ones, are kind of a sharp bet. The Paper Mario, the Origami King has great jokes, and it's cute as heck. But also like the 3D platformers, Mario, Kirby, I have also, in terms of Lego, I haven't played it, but I hear a lot of great things about, the latest one, the Skywalker Saga. Mm-hmm. So that might be a good choice. Otherwise, you know, just sometimes playing a hecking great game, just works. So whenever Tunic comes to the Switch, I would recommend it. It was not the experience of playing an old school game. It was the experience of playing a new game that channels that old school energy, or, you know, and so I that really hit the spot for me. So it was not, you know, like, oh yeah, I've played this before. It was like, I've played something like this before. This is great. So Tunic, that's basically it.
I will say I actually would have found playing Tunic during one of those times to be infuriating, because I found it kind of frustrating.
There's, yeah, there can be frustration, but I think the predominant feeling I had playing it was kind of the not euphoria, that's too strong, but like the joy of discovering things. I think that had that weighed more than the frustration with like the combat, especially once I turned off the whole dying part.
Yeah, I mean that does make it. The ultimately, like when I played the final boss, and it's like, oh, actually, there's a second form. Fuck you! And I'm like, no, there's not.
Right.
Fuck this shit. I've had more than enough of that.
So I don't know. I found that that really hit the spot.
So I'm gonna go after the complex turn based thing here, this is going to be an acquired taste thing. I promise you, this game is not what it looks like, which is a bunch of moe anime trash. It is moe anime trash, but it's more than that. I haven't played this particular entry, but people really seem to like it. I was thinking Atelier Ryza, which is, those games are upbeat, but they're not like, they're upbeat in a way that is like calm and soothing, not like over the top happiness.
it's the power of friendship disgust and
oh yeah, it is, absolutely. But
yeah, that might be a red line for me.
Yeah, but the complexity comes from the alchemy system, which you can take as deep as you want it to try to make the most perfect version of the things you want, ranging from the weapons that your parties in the turn-based combat system use, to items you can use in the battle, to just things you can sell to try to break the game's economy. There is a lot of opportunity to sit there and iterate on something you've made to try to make it just a little bit better. Or you can go online and look up things that people have done to these items to come up with ways to craft. Like, this is crafting on some kind of like micro scale where you have to go out and do a bunch of stuff to get there. There is a story, and yeah, there is some power of friendship. There's definitely a lot of anime tropism. There's some lighthearted, we'll call it lighthearted and innocent Yuri bait in some of these games, but you know, it's very, very like, it's in no way sexual. These games are not sexual in any way. But there is something about them that is just kind of happy and sedate in a really specific way, and really trying to like crank down on a formula to figure out the exact right way to maximize the profit you can get from selling this thing and manufacturing it in scale, so you don't have to worry about money anymore, or this bomb that's super effective against this really tough boss, but trying to tweak it just a little bit so you can absolutely rock her world. There's something in there that it takes the complexity of the battle system, which has a lot of things going on in it, but then allows you to add layers of complexity outside the battle system so that you can come in and steamroll a little bit more effectively. Or you can make the battles tweak them a little bit to make them more intricate. I would say if you have access to a 3DS, you know, the 3DS eShop's going to stop taking credit cards soon. Radiant Historia, Perfect Chronology, it's questionable art decisions aside, Radiant Historia has a very complicated battle system. I enjoyed it quite a bit. It's a very long game. I don't know how well Perfect Chronology did, but that original game is a masterpiece. But of course it's hard to get, so that's sort of the counter. And yeah, I'm going to echo Greg's recommendation of the Mario Golf and Mario Tennis GBA JRPGs from Camelot.
Which, again, for now, like the Wii U kind of is the best way of accessing those, but that's, yeah, the same stipulation about the, yeah, it's May, is this month, right? So 10 days
it's
from now or something?
10 days from now, yeah. So it'll be about 5 days when this episode comes out.
Yeah.
But you could still put money on it through cards and stuff.
It's true. It's another, like, layer of,
right,
flexibility that's lost, essentially, that's going on.
It's not quite as bad in the US because we haven't broken the link between the Switch and the Wii U /3DS. So, like, if I put money on my Switch, it's going to show up on the others.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's true. There was a whole, like, data, compromised data sort of warning in...
Right.
A certain European territories anyway, that you might want to sever that link, basically, because the older NNID system had some sort of breach or something.
Yeah. I've got two factors, so it's not nearly as disconcerting, but yeah, there's still those options there, but yeah, those games are really, really good and they're really fun. And when we did the Retroactivon, we did it for tennis, right?
Tennis, yes.
Yeah, you should go back and listen to that if you want. Like, it's a really fun episode and I really enjoyed that Retroactive way more than I expected to. Daniel, hopefully things, improve and things get better soon. But, it's...
I just thought we just went through kind of a really stressful period when we were moving. And Karen found a lot of... found that Tetris Effect really helped her get her mind off things. So that might be a good one.
That's a good one, too. Yeah. Thank you for writing. Hopefully we gave you something you can work with. And I don't have a good way to close that. So I'm gonna let Greg read the most emotional whiplash email response possible now.
Yes, indeed. Reg McFly writes, Dear RFN, apologies for the second email. But upon reading the Edge review for Kirby's new game, I thought about the various final bosses that Kirby has fought. As is my understanding, Kirby has now fought and defeated the concept of time canonically. This suggests that death is no longer a concern in Kirby's world. With that in mind, what concepts would you like Kirby to tackle in future games? Work-life balance, inflation, the ozone layer. Keen to, yep. I mean, could he, like, if he tried mouthful mode on the Earth, would he kind of like take control of it essentially?
Presumably, there's a limit, but I'm not sure what it is. He also fought Nightmare, which is like literal concept of fear. So no one can die and no one ages and no one is afraid anymore, thanks to Kirby. Definitely true. Definitely reflects reality. I think if he's going after time and he's already taken that bastard out, I'd like to see Kirby go after illness. Like, just like he's gonna go find illness, the physical manifestation thereof, and just destroy it. Just, illness hurts a lot of people. And if it's just gone, like, I mean, what more could we ask of him?
Like, I think the one that's most kind of sort of fits best as a sort of conceptual kind of partner to time would be scarcity.
Oh.
If you get rid of the concept of scarcity completely, then, that's the other big thing, isn't it? I guess you could argue time itself is some sort of like scarce resource.
But that's true.
He's already got rid of that particular dimension of it. But, the scarcity of everything else, food and space and everything else, then, presumably at that point you're just in some sort of weird floating non-existence.
you're in the... It turns out that that's not a great conceit to set the Star Trek universe in sometimes component. So maybe that's it. Maybe that's how they got rid of scarcity in the Star Trek universe. Maybe that was it. They just had a large pink sentient destruction machine destroy it. If you get rid of scarcity, does that also get rid of tanking in baseball? Asking for a friend.
I guess so. Just like sport, everything, does it all goes? You get rid of time and scarcity. It's just
baseball got rid of time 160 years ago.
baseball is an ongoing war against the concept of time, yes. I suppose that's true.
So in which Kirby did you defeat the concept of time? Like, I'm not up on my Kirby lore, it turns out.
I've not played every Kirby game either, so I'm trying to remember, but they're usually just this sort of dazzling, crazy, you know, even as far back as, like, Kirby's Adventure. I remember playing that. I think I played the end of that for the first time when it was one of those games that kicked off the Wii U virtual console for the 30th anniversary of the Famicom. Mm-hmm. And they were like 30 pence or whatever, those games. And yeah, I got to the end, and obviously it was, all of it is very impressive for an NES game. Of course, it's like, you know, almost as late as any NES game could be, but, you know, but in, what was it, 92 or something? Like, it was very late. It was into the Super Nintendo era. But certainly just like, you know, it's already been impressive, but you know, that last boss there was like, oh wow. Like, I'd obviously played later games in the series, but thinking, oh, it goes back this far. This just kind of like, wow, this escalated into something like cosmic at the end, you know, kind of thing, from, you know, kind of just walking around a forest and beating up a tearful tree at the beginning to where it goes at the end, you know, that they kind of laid down the marker all the way back then, and then kind of they have to live up to it. And it is always quite a high standard, but they usually, I can remember the Robobot, I think it was the Robobot one, was quite a lot. That was very cosmic, as I recall.
Yeah, I was going to bring up Robobot because, like, basically, what is he fighting if not the concept of, what do you call it? Ruthless capitalism? Or
that's really prevalent in the whole game with Robobot, yeah. Isn't it? Like, the company is the villain.
Yeah, and it's just kind of all-consuming, basically, so Kirby takes care of that. I don't want to...
I think it's called Holtman Works, I think, or something.
Right. So now I'm on a wiki where it explains everything, and apparently I've never actually beaten the final form of that boss, because you have to go into the true arena, and then there's, like, a whole lot more that happens, including third phase, and then final phase, and I don't know where they find all this info. Like, apparently the some sort of computer consumed all of Haltman's soul, and like, I don't remember these. Yeah, like, I have no idea. Like, I don't follow the stories of my Kirby games.
Did Kojima write the Kirby lore?
I'm wondering, because Forgotten Land has a very similar thing with the, like, the real like super final form of the last boss, mm-hmm. is in the boss rush type sort of sub game in the arena, and I've done that, but now I'm wondering, did I actually do that in Robobot or not, or did I just assume, you know, that wouldn't be in something like the true arena back then? It was 6 years ago. It's getting, mm-hmm. I can't remember. It'd be perhaps something to consider going back to at some point if I haven't, but although it could be quite sudden to get straight back up to the last boss, even if it is Kirby. But yeah, the I love the punmanship with Holtman Works, because it's, first of all, it's, you know, stop people from working because it's all about robots taking their place, but it also works how into it, so it's like a dig at their own company. Presumably some frustrated employees, kind of expressing their disdain for the higher ups at HAL over the years.
Yeah, I don't have much to add, I guess. Like, where is there left to go? For Kirby,
I think basically to put a finer point on it, it's greed, isn't it? That is, mm-hmm. which is quite an ironic thing for Kirby to defeat, given his boundless appetite. But, you know, it could be a doctor heal thyself type situation, but that might only make it more compelling.
Yeah. Sorry, I just got a text. Someone needs the room that I'm recording in, so I'm going to have to move. But yeah, sorry, like, were we done with this question, or?
Well, that would B, James, to decide, but James said he would be back shortly, so...
I've just returned.
Okay. Yes, there you are.
Did y'all wrap the Kirby email?
Pretty much, I think, yes.
Okay. Yeah, I think we need to do a better job than that, though. And that wraps it up for... No.
Oh, okay. Well, all right.
And that's the last ninja.
And on that... Gil, would you read our final email?
Yeah, but before that, we're going to take a break. And when you come back, I'm going to be in a different room.
Yes. Oh, okay. All right.
That
well.
Was another thing you missed.
We're back with email, singular, just the one. We had to take a break. So I'm going to let Guillaume close out us with this last email. Would you please, sir?
Sure. Scrolling down, David writes, "Hi, RFN crew. With the impending death of the Wii... Am I at the right place? Yes. With the impending death of the Wii U and the 3DS eShops, now is the perfect time for the semi-annual conversation about what the My Nintendo Rewards program will evolve into. I'd like to know your ideas on what Nintendo could do, not should do, with this program that for 5 years now has left the Switch category of rewards in coming soon status. Personally, my hope is that they will convert it into a Crime Stoppers style hotline, where Nintendo will give you a single platinum coin for every link to a social media post that contains fan art of a Nintendo IP. I'd love to convert my farm of interconnected PS3s currently mining for Bitcoin instead put their collected processing power towards scraping for Twitter posts of Mario and Kirby in order to collect enough points to trade them in for officially licensed Nintendo wallpapers for my phone. Love to hear your ideas, and keep up the great work."
It's impressively awful scenario. That's a hat tip.
I wanted to direct this to Guillaume first, as the man who relies on an inferior search engine to get free Xbox stuff.
Oh, that's true. Oh, yes, the puppet strings.
You got me. Well, that's the thing, though. Like, it gives me tangible rewards, such as a continued Game Pass for no money. Just
to you, that's more tangible than my Nintendo official wallpapers.
I guess, but
that's not how everyone would see it.
Well, like, see, I would ask for a phone app that just make Pikmin noises on command, but I already have that in Pikmin Bloom. So it's like I can get all the that I want.
Can you do them on command?
Kind of, yeah. You poke at them on the phone, and they make their noises, and yeah. So I. Yeah, sorry, like right like this right now, like I don't think I have a good answer, but yeah, sure, more Pikmin noises, or maybe like a series of apps that make you sound like Charles Martinet with his various voices, or actually no, just makes you sound like Charles Martinet's regular voice.
The irony value. Yeah, you got to pay extra for Mario, and then like the top tier is Waluigi voice.
Of
like
course.
Yeah, that is a lot of platinum coins, but it's attainable.
Maybe you get his Bit Trip Runner voice as the free one.
Yes.
I want. So I think as opposed to continuing to not give us stuff, which is what this program has become, or the opportunity to buy things, which is occasionally they do, like, oh, you can give us an unreasonable number in shipping in order to get this for 400 Nintendo points. What if instead, and we can spend money to get like one penny off, what if instead it gave us money for the opportunity to buy things digitally? You see, right now, there's one omission from the eShop, and no version of the eShop has had it, that the Wii Shop channel absolutely has and makes everything else look pedestrian. Does anybody know what it is?
So not offhand, given how bloody limited the functionality of the Wii Shop channel was, it's hard to even conceive of it having any kind of comparative advantage over something else.
The ability to gift.
Oh, that's true. Yeah,
you gotta think it's some sort of legal thing, no? Or I mean, international thing, or...
Well, considering the only time I ever used it was to send John, enjoy your massage.
Yeah, definitely you broke some laws there, but...
I'm fairly confident.
You were gifted by listener Voodoo Muscle March.
I was.
Along with John and Johnny.
Yes. The only time I used it was for... So, I would say that of the four use cases I am aware of, none of them were done for anything but evil. And so that might be the issue. But what if they said, okay, well, look, you know, we were talking about our VTuber setup in there. One thing that Twitch introduced a while ago to try to get people to stick around and to just incentivize watching, you know, beyond just putting money into the thing for like tip bonuses and stuff, and subscriptions, you know, they do serve up ads. So they want people to stick around and engage, and engagement kind of is a metric that go on the platform. They introduce these things called channel points. And so like, as you watch a stream, you accumulate channel points. And if you're subscribed, you get bonus points. And if you catch multiple streams in a row, you get points. And then it's up to the streamer what they want to do with that. They can do all kinds of stuff, and some have become really creative with how they use them, but they're just kind of like a toy currency that doesn't really have any value to anyone anywhere, and you can't buy anything of value with them, like Club Nintendo points, or My Nintendo points, whatever they call them now. So they're almost exactly a parallel. They're an engagement mechanism because you buy a bunch of games and spend time with them, or you click the coin that's rolling across the page, or you sign into the page every week. Well, they don't have any real value because you can barely use them for anything that you would want, or maybe you get a penny off of a game. But what if, like, some streamers have been really smart about it and put, like, one that's, like, way far down the road, like, hundreds of thousands of channel points would take you, you know, the most dedicated watching eons of time to accumulate. What if they let you, you know, it's 1 cent per, what's it? It's 1 cent per dollar, I think, or 1 point per dollar or something like that.
The gold points. The gold points is 5% back, essentially.
5%. Okay. So
it's 1% on the gold points that you get for registering a physical card.
And that's the
premium of, like, oh, what do you get? 5 times more if you buy it digitally is their incentive for going digital.
What if, in order to prevent people from using it for evil, they said, okay, you can gift games, but only if you can cover the entire cost with gold points you accumulated from buying software. You might say, well, wait, how does that stop people from doing it for evil? It doesn't, but it means you paid Nintendo more for the privilege to engage in that evil. And that way they can say, like, well, I mean, we raised the barrier a little bit, and... they also get your money. So if you really want to send John all the worst stuff on the Switch eShop, which you do, you could do it really fast. You don't have to wait around for points to accumulate. You can just buy a bunch of stuff on the eShop and then get those points and then turn around and spend those points sending John one of those games that was about, like, how do you date a Grauwe model in Japan that aren't translated into English. And it's like a bunch of pictures from her album, and it's like a dating sim that nobody can read because it's all in Japanese. It's done over a cell phone. Those were a thing that happened for some reason on the American eShop. And you could send John all of them by only spending $1,000 on eShop software. It's genius. It's a money-making venture, and you'll feel better about contributing to a world in which we're giving each other gifts. Like, that's... like, showing how much you love and appreciate someone is a real antidote to the sort of, I would say, virulent and malcontented world we live in. So, I mean, really, this is about love. That's what this is about. This isn't about causing emotional distress or making someone, every time they turn on their Switch, see a blinking message, go, oh, fuck.
What is it this time?
This is about love. This is about the power of... this is about, like, the agape. That's what this is. This is the pure manifestation of what agapic love looks like. That's it.
Yeah, well, I mean, it all... they have actually sort of, with the platinum point stuff there recently, obviously the gold points is just, you know, just a cash back type scheme, you know, and that's something, you know, the 5%, like, it's pretty orthodox, you know, down to earth kind of meat and potato stuff, but you know, that's to some extent more than, you know, like previous rewards regimes had, in terms of just something that does have tangible value that isn't just a, you know, bloody my Nintendo wallpaper or whatever. But they started to get a little bit more in this realm of puppet string stuff with the platinum points just recently, haven't they? The that red icon on the Switch Online icon that appeared, what was it, like a few years into the Switch's life, on the, you know, on the bottom of your home screen, that you know, sort of appalled people from a visual design sense, because it doesn't fit in with the other icons at all. Like, you know, this big red thing, compared to, you know, the everything else is just like a sort of simple line design, and then that's just this red Switch logo. But like, now it's like, okay, if you play, I think it's this month, it's Kirby Superstar on NSO, you get like 30 points or something. And, you know, you get similar amount of points if you play something online each week. And, you know, this more like the kind of stuff that you see on Xbox that, you know, presumably Guillaume does assiduously every day to rack up those points.
Yeah, it sounds like the Game Pass quests.
Yeah, but the problem again is like, well, what does it all lead back to? What can you actually do with these points? And I guess like on that front, we've referenced this somewhat recently, the whole thing of like, well, over here in the UK, like there's a My Nintendo store that's actually UK based now. So like when they have one of these things of like, oh, here's a set of Pikmin coasters, as you would say, for your table, drinks mats or whatever, that you could get for 400 points or something. But you don't necessarily have to pay much for shipping, or if you combine it with some other, or, you know, other items from that store, you might have to pay anything for shipping. Whereas when it was based in Germany, you know, it was a higher number. So it's kind of, that's somewhat progress, I suppose. You know, but, there is still the issue of just like, yeah, this kind of doesn't lead anywhere that exciting these days. Cause what we have before, but was, you know, like certain things I got from the Club Nintendo that operated here with like the loyalty points that didn't have a cash value, but you would get things like, oh, here's the, you know, the kind of multi CD soundtrack to Super Mario 3D World. Or, you know, a Super Smash Brothers selection CD for the 3DS and Wii U games, or the Link Between Worlds, or, you know, the Kirby Triple Deluxe. You know, like, those were quite nice things to have, to cash in for those loyalty points that these days you don't really get soundtracks anyway. You know, you'll get things, like I said, these kind of odd things like, you know,
the Kirby shopping bag.
Yes, the shopping bags. I've seen a few Animal Crossing ones, a Pikmin one, various things, those little Super Mario 3D World magnets I referenced in a previous episode. Yeah, cute little things, but yeah, probably not something as substantial as a CD soundtrack or something. But then what you also have in that the Switch Online little icon that takes you through the sort of browser on the Switch itself, is this whole thing now of like the custom icons. Like this is the next step from like wallpapers for your phone or whatever. It's okay. So now like that each month or even week, I think they change things up. It's like we've got like different Animal Crossing characters this week, or we've got like, oh, this time it's you know, when Kirby was new, he had a bunch of Forgotten Land stuff, or that now they're on to Mario Kart 8 stuff. Like, you just trade the points that you make from signing in every week and, you know, doing the puppet strings thing with like playing a particular NSO game they want you to play, to like, but oh, I'll have this character and this outline and it'll be my own like icon for your, you know, your kind of Switch profile or whatever. Like that, that seems to be the main thing that they're doing at the minute, which it's not the most sort of potent thing. It certainly, yeah, it does not equate very convincingly with the idea of, like, you know, with Microsoft, you know, kind of converting it into Game Pass or like other gift cards or other stuff. But like I said, you do already have the gold points, you know, for that to some extent. But yeah, it kind of feels like they're just feeling it out at the moment. That it's like, okay, we're testing how much we can make the puppets dance with these incentives. And then once they have an idea of how well that's working, or then, you know, maybe they'll take it somewhere. The only problem with that is you'll find, you know, and I'm sure they're aware, but of course, you know, people will respond to these things much more powerfully if there are tangible incentives on the other end of it. You know, so it's at this point, you know, if you're waiting to see how much of an effect you can have, you know, without offering those incentives first, you might find that it's, you know, not nearly as kind of persuasive as you'd like.
Yeah, but then again, like, Nintendo wouldn't want to give away too many fridge magnets for free or nearly free. So.
Oh, no, we can't have that. Absolutely not. No, it seems like we're in the realm of sort of tat for now, basically.
So, lately, the cryptocurrencies have taken a beating. If it keeps going like this, maybe they'll be about as valuable as platinum points. So I guess one thing Nintendo could do is let me buy cocaine with my platinum points. If I can't use my cryptocurrency for it, then I should be able to use my Nintendo points. That would be
You kind of can. You just have to trade them in for the wallpapers and the fridge magnets first, and then just, you know, everyone's...
It's a barter, the cocaine barter economy.
the fungible assets of, you know, the tote bag and all that kind of stuff.
Your pusher.
They're big into it.
How many lines can I get for this sweet, sweet Kirby tote bag? Limited edition. Well,
there were some nice N64 posters on the UK one a bit ago.
Must be nice to live in a country where it's reasonable to ship ship goods.
Yeah, that is. I mean, that was one of the things, wasn't it, with the old regime. Mm-hmm. That was one of the sort of complaints with the, oh, well, the US rewards are rubbish. You know, a lot of the token people would say, like, especially Japan. Like, always had this cool stuff. And then, you know, Americans especially would look at what they were being offered in terms of physical rewards. You know, and they weren't even necessarily getting, like, some of the soundtracks that I was talking about, but especially compared to the Japanese stuff, which would be soundtracks and collectibles and all sorts of things, it was always decried as being terrible. But of course, a lot of that is because of those, you know, the distribution challenges of America. It just isn't economic in the same way, you know, as it would be, in Japan. And so that's why, you know, to some extent, it was like probably, I don't know, is it say for the best? You know, it's just like, yeah, okay, you know, it's never going to be on a level playing field in America when it's based around physical rewards. You know, so in that sense, like, again, the kind of just the simple cashback gold points thing was kind of progress in that way. You know, for the American reward scheme, I would guess, but equally people do still like physical stuff, you know, or at least something that feels kind of, you know, personalizable or customizable, you know, that kind of thing. So I guess that's where probably the whole icon thing comes from, you know, just to, like, because they've done updates to the selectable icons over time, you know, like, oh, here's a few more from a new game that's coming out or something. But yeah, you will end up, certainly did end up seeing, like, lots of the same one if you have quite a lot of people on a friends list, because there just weren't that many to choose from. Whereas now that it's customizable, at least, you know, you do get to see lots of different icons that people have made from basically just, like, dumping loads of the character art for the new Kirby game as potential icons. So, yeah, it's silly, it's kind of trifling, but, you know, it's something.
Well, That is going to do it for us this week. Just give me the opportunity to send John whatever garbage comes up on the eShop. I will give you good money for games I won't play so I can send him a game he also won't play.
Yeah, your description of, like, pay for the privilege to engage with the evil did put me in mind of, like, buying a personal seat license at the Cowboy Stadium.
Yeah, see? This is a well-worn metric. There's lots of opportunities here to study what your peers have done and maximize your opportunity.
The video game PSL personal shitposting license. So that's it's just I'm gonna shitpost this game to your system. It's a frontier that I don't know whether we've got there yet, but maybe one day.
Like, I think it's genius, and there's untapped potential. But that's good. Hey,
Jerry's all about those glory hole days. He sold us many times.
Oh, God. No. Fuck. All right. We're going to get out of here now. We were going to do another segment, but Greg just ruined it.
That's his fault. Jerry ruined it. He ruins everything. Including his own face.
Fuck. He's not even as old as you think he is.
he's getting up there now, though, to be fair.
You can send your emails to rfn@nintendoworldreport.com, and I don't know what's going to happen when you do that. Probably nothing good. We might just use them on the show. Greg, what is our music to close out the show this week?
Yeah, well, we had a request in by email from Caesar for music from an NES shooter by Taxan. This is interesting sort of background to this in terms of one of the people who was credited as a designer on Burai Fighter was Ken Lopp, who he kind of, after this Taxan sort of software, basically kind of company set up made to produce games mostly for the US market, NES games at that time, basically wrapped up operations not long after Burai Fighter came out, like in the early 90s, at which point I think Ken Lobb moved on first to somewhere else, maybe Namco, but then at Nintendo, where he ended up being the person whose name got attached to that sort of, is it semi-automatic or something, that gun in GoldenEye?
The crap gun.
Yes, where I think originally they were going to call it something else, and that name had to be pulled. And then for whatever reason, Paul Ken Lobb, it became the Clob. But then he ended up at Microsoft. I think he's still there now.
I believe that's correct, in some capacity
of their games division. But apparently he was significantly contributed to this game, Burai Fighter, which I think, came back as, one of the sort of raft of games on Game Boy Color. You know, one of the things that was quite popular when Game Boy Color arrived was just doing NES ports, even though it wasn't ideal in many cases because of the low resolution. There were a lot of those, but otherwise, and I think it's come back, and I think there's been a virtual console release or anything like that for Burai Fighter. But certainly, just from listening to the soundtrack here that Caesar suggested, it's pretty fun to listen to. This is the stage one music, which is noted also is used on stage five, but it's classic shooter stage one stuff. You know, if you've ever played a Gradius game, that kind of, like, you know, upbeat, like everything's kind of getting underway and it's going to be awesome kind of vibe before the sort of crushing difficulty usually sets in. I can't speak to the content of the game in the case of Burai Fighter, but it definitely evokes those same feelings.
Cool. All right. Well, on that, it's time for us to go. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Bye-bye.